This observation will not be particularly surprising to anybody here, but mail delivery has changed a lot over the years. Of course, today many people communicate using email, and we have got a choice of multiple service providers. People use Twitter and Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Foursquare, and probably an app that is being developed right now as I preach to you. But for those who are not interested in using electronic platforms, there's still multiple choices, some that we would not have really imagined just a few decades ago. Federal Express transformed the mail industry with its overnight delivery services. And our entire internet economy seems to be dependent upon UPS. I don't know about you, but I feel now that my neighborhood was missing something if I didn't see the brown truck driving around in the afternoon. It's become part of the landscape. But amidst all of the change and innovation that has taken place in recent years, there is still the good old United States Postal Service, that brainchild of Benjamin Franklin, who more than 200 years ago envisioned the need for a continental mail delivery system if the new nation was to be bound together. I'm not going to give you a history of the post office today, but I would like to focus on a particular kind of mail. No, not the catalogs that your poor carrier has to schlep to your door every day, nor the bills that sadly continue to pile up, or the appeals for support that come from organizations we never knew existed. And good God help us, let us lay aside all of the political flyers that are showing up each day. I'm not even going to talk about the cards and the letters that show up from family and friends, those missives that we so enjoy receiving. Instead, I want to talk to you about what is now known as express mail or priority mail, but traditionally has been called special delivery mail. Now, special delivery mail requires a lot of forethought and planning and care. The person who wants to send the message has to pay extra to use the service. The post office has special channels to move the message along. And then the person receiving the special delivery knows that he or she is getting something different, something important, because it comes in a special envelope, and sometimes even needs to be signed for. Now, delivery doesn't just involve sending. It involves an expectation that it is going to arrive at a particular location. There's a journey involved with a destination. And delivery doesn't just involve mail, or packages, or messages. But as we heard in today's lesson from Exodus, delivery can involve an entire people. We heard how God looked down upon the plight of the Israelites, and not only said that he would free them from slavery, but that he would bring them to the promised land. The story of the Israelites being delivered from bondage is among the oldest parts of Scripture we have. And of the origin nations of the peoples of the world, it is one of the most stunning and remarkable. Think of our own national origin story. We like to talk about how a plucky band of people fought against tyranny and asserted their rights. The people of Germany and Italy share culture, and they came together from lots of little kingdoms and duchies to form their modern nations. And then there are peoples who are far older. The Japanese tell of their imperial house going back more than 1,000 years and tracing its roots into the mists of time. The Romans had the Aeneid, the story of a group of warriors who fled Troy and ultimately founded the greatest empire the world had ever known. But the Israelites told the story in which they were slaves. They were oppressed. They had no power. And they were not in a position to do anything about their situation. But they told how God came and delivered them. That story, passed down from generation to generation to this very day, is one that says who the people of Israel were and are, but also talks of who made them. And that in turn circles back to who they are. In telling the story of lowly origins, the Israelites weren't engaging in an exercise of self-abnegation. They weren't seeking to humiliate themselves. But instead, they were reminding themselves that their God had made a promise to their forebears, and that that God would keep his promises. Pharaoh might have dismissed the Israelites. The peoples of the world might have ignored them and thought them of no account. But the ancient Hebrews and the kingdoms of Israel and Judah and the Jewish people throughout the years always remembered those original covenantal promises that the God who had fashioned the cosmos, who made every living creature, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea and the animals of the earth, remembered the plight of slaves and freed them. And not only freed them, but led them to the promised land. This story provided hope and inspiration and encouragement. It was a source of power and still is. Now, we, being people of the book, hear these stories, and we too are moved by them. And we want to sing the praises of our mighty God who does wondrous things. But there are different ways that different people can appreciate these stories and understand them and experience them. And on this Martin Luther King Day weekend, we are reminded of the part of the American family that lived this story. Our brothers and sisters in the African American community, enduring centuries of slavery, enduring the catastrophe of Reconstruction, engaging in the hard fight for civil rights, drew on these words and these stories for strength and inspiration and power and identity. And they knew, as their fellow Americans all too often dismissed them and despised them and denied them their rights, that God was always with them. That God was going to deliver justice to them and lead them to the promised land. We hear these stories today, and we can take pride in the role that the Christian church played in the abolition movement and the fight for civil rights. It was people of faith who animated these great endeavors. But if we are going to boast of our role in these great movements in American history, then we as people of faith must also accept the responsibility to continue the struggle for full equality, to acknowledge that we have not yet all arrived at the promised land, to confess that there is still racism in this nation, that not everybody is able to fully participate in the blessings of the American dream. And doing so does not mean that we are not patriotic or that we are somehow weak. But instead, it is a recognition of our strength and our conviction that the promises of this country are true and valid and can be achieved. And even more than that, they are a testament to our belief that the promises of Scripture are true. That the God who walked with the Israelites all those years ago, that God of justice is still abroad in the land today. We recognize this day that that message of freedom and justice and equality is still in transit. It has not yet arrived. We are called to help move it along. We are bearers of the message. More than that, we are called to be fighters in the quest for truth and justice and fairness. This is our call. As Christians, as people who have inherited promises from God, we are called to share the good news that the God who's made himself known to us in Jesus Christ has called us and has invited us to help bring about the blessed community, the kingdom, the new creation, where all are fully welcome and empowered and included. We remember this conviction today. And may God empower us to carry it forward in the days and the weeks and the years to come.